Well, we're going to start on time, as is our custom here, and good evening, and welcome to the fifth presentation in this, our 12th series of talks on Kentucky Live, Southern Culture at its Best, sponsored by the Friends of WKU Libraries. My name is Brian Coots, and as head of the Department of Library Public Services, I coordinate this series with my colleague in the blue, Peggy Wright, and with help from our webmaster shooting pictures at the back, Haiwan Wan, and our research instruction coordinator at the back, Brian Carson. Ryan Dowell and Christopher McConnell designed our posters, and our technical specialist tonight is Shadon Melke. Our speaker tonight is a native of Louisville, Kentucky. His father's parents had moved there from Hopkinsville, while his mother's family had moved from Mississippi when she was 14. He was one of seven children of a brick mason and carpenter and a domestic who during one of their moves lived within blocks of Cassius Clay. His father moved the family to Newburgh, a more rural part of the county, when he was eight, where he attended schools with several classmates who would later become sports legends. After graduating from Thomas Jefferson High School in 1965, he signed an athletic scholarship to play football for the University of Kentucky, becoming the first African-American player to play any sport in the Southeastern Conference, and made history on September 30, 1967, when as a UK varsity, he played against the University of Mississippi. After an injury and rehabilitation, he would later transfer to Western Kentucky University, becoming a star player for Coach Jimmy Fikes, and WKU's most valuable offensive player in all OVC in his senior year. Upon receiving his bachelor's degree in business administration, he worked for several Fortune 500 companies before becoming executive director of the Bowling Green Housing Authority. 2 years later, he returned to Louisville, and for the past 23 years, recently retired last month, he's been the regional director of Metro Housing while serving as a minister for the Newburgh Apostolic Church. On September 27th of last year, during a timeout at the first quarter of the University of Kentucky's game against Vanderbilt, the University of Kentucky recognized four former players, the Wildcats' first black players, including our speaker, who was also invited to address the team at a Friday practice. His life has also been the subject of a recent documentary film, which aired on the CBS Sports Network on February 16th. Still Running, published in 2013, is his autobiography. It's our great pleasure to welcome Nate Northington back to Bowling Green. Nate.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
It's definitely a pleasure. It's an honor and a pleasure to be here in Bowling Green once again. It's always good to come back to my alma mater. Graduated from here in 1971, and I'm just honored that Dr. Coots and the Western Kentucky University Libraries invited me here today. I did write a book in 2013, and the title is Still Running. The autobiography of Nate Northington, the first African-American football player in the Southeastern Conference. And I'm so happy today to have a lot of my friends here today with me. Some of my fellow classmates, Dr. Howard Bailey. Have my wife is with me today as well, Gwendolyn. So just so good to have each and every one that's here this afternoon. And excuse my voice. Having trouble with a little hoarseness, but y'all pray for me and everything will be okay, I believe. I believe in prayer. Amen. Prayer changes things.
Yes, it does.
Amen. So we just thank the Lord for that. The title of the book, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you some footage on the PowerPoint, and then also I'm going to show you a few segments of the documentary that was mentioned. And the documentary is called Forward Progress, the Integration of Football in the SEC. Amen. And as you know, I was, as was mentioned, the first African-American to sign a scholarship with UK and in the SEC. And that was a journey, amen, that we took shortly after I signed. There was another gentleman that signed by the name of Greg Page from Middlesbrough, Kentucky. So we signed she signed shortly after I did, and we went there as freshmen in 1966. This was in 65 when we signed. In 1966, we went to UK as freshmen, and of course, the first year during that time, the freshmen were not eligible to play on the varsity team. So we played on the freshman team in 1966, Greg and I, and very successful. The next year, we were scheduled to play on the varsity. And I'm not going to get into that right now. I'll talk about that a little bit later. Mr. Bailey, Dr. Bailey, went to school with Greg Page in Middlesboro. And so he knew him very, very well. So what I'm going to do is show you just a few slides here real quick. Okay, WKU, Kentucky Live Series, and that is a cover of my book, as you see. And there's some over here, so anyone that doesn't have one yet, we'd like for you to stay and purchase one, and we'd be more than happy to sign it for you. Okay, here's a picture that's also, some of these pictures are also in the book. This is a picture of me, it says, Make Noise and Signing Granting Aid with Governor Edward T. Breathitt, becoming the first African American to receive an athletic scholarship at the University of Kentucky. Also in the picture is the football coach, Charlie Bradshaw. He's the next one on the left, next to Governor Breathitt. Then we also have my high school coach, Coach Jim Gray, from T.J. Thomas Jefferson High School, Louisville, Kentucky. Then Dr. John Oswald, who was the president of the University of Kentucky at this particular time, 1965. And here's a picture of the 1967 varsity football team at the University of Kentucky. And I am, if I can remember how I'm supposed to do this.
The middle one.
The middle one, right? Okay. Okay, there we go. There I am right there, number 23. And Greg Page, number 82. So this is our team in 1967, the varsity football team at the University of Kentucky. So we are the two African-American players on that team. And there I am as a freshman, running back. 1966 was the first year there at UK as a freshman. And this is in the spring, I believe, of 1967, doing spring practice. This is the shot that they caught me unawares there. Okay, this is official picture for the, as a sophomore, as a varsity player. This was official picture. At that time, they have, it's amazing because they have a professional photographer that goes around, I guess he goes around to all the different SEC schools during this time and take pictures. So if you see pictures at Tennessee, Alabama, Mississippi, they all were, you know, similar to this picture here. And I think they still do that as well. So very professional pictures. Here's a picture of my friend and teammate, Greg Page. He's in his official UK blazer and tie that we had to wear when we took road trips. We always had to wear those blazers and our ties. Greg Page. And here's a picture of Greg in practice in 67. And here's a picture of the stadium that used to be the stadium at University of Kentucky. It's called Stoll Field, McLean Stadium. And right to the right of the stadium was the basketball arena, which was called Memorial Coliseum before they built Rupp Arena. This is a picture taken in 1967, I believe. And it says, this is a field where I played in the game to break the color barrier in the SEC on September 30th, 1967, against the University of Mississippi. And what's interesting is that, you know, as was mentioned, my mother is a native of Mississippi. And also Greg Page, his father, was a native of Mississippi. So it's very, very ironic that, you know, ironic. I believe in destiny. So I believe that, you know, all that came together for some reason, for a purpose. So but we played against the Ole Miss, University of Mississippi, in 1967. And I think that stadium held about 37,000 people. so usually it was pretty full when they played. And this is a memorial of Greg Page. This is came from the a media page from a UK program in one of the games after Greg passed away. And it says, I'll read it for you. It says, "University of Kentucky is grateful for the time Greg Page was here. We are glad that his teammates and many other students had the advantage of knowing him. And now we go on from the sober, solemn moments enriched by this young man, his courage, his faith, his short time with us." UK President John W. Oswald at Stowe Field Memorial Ceremony. Ah, here we go. WKU, right? Okay, I'm number 42 in this picture. Number 42 playing, this is my senior year, I believe, 1970, and I'm playing fullback. I used to be a running back, but when I gained a lot of weight, from about 75 at UK to about 195 at Western, then they put me a fullback. same here, number 42. And the guy behind me, number 43 there, that I'm blocking for, is against Eastern Michigan University. His name is Clarence Jackson, number 43. He was a freshman. I was a senior at this time. And Clarence went on to play briefly for the New York Jets. I think he held the record for some time as the most yardage as a running back here at WKU before it was broken a few years ago. Ah, here we go. Good picture. Number 42, there I am there. And I'm running. This is a homecoming game, 1970, against Eastern Kentucky University, our arch rival. And that was the longest run I had in college. It was 77 yards for a touchdown. So it looks like the guy's going to catch me, but you couldn't catch me. Even at 195 pounds, I was still pretty fast. And Western Kentucky University, Ohio Valley Conference champions, we were the champions of the OVC in 1970. Won 8 games, lost 1, and tied 1. And let's see, a couple guys here that you may, this is me right here in the front row. And another guy, Lawrence Brain, who was quite a player here. This guy here, Sam Pearson, his brother, you may have heard his brother, Drew Pearson, played for Dallas Cowboys. And here's a guy back here that I know you know, with the mustache way back in the back, by the name of Romeo Crennel. And he has about 5 Super Bowl rings from playing, from coaching with the New York Giants, the New England Patriots, and all those schools. He got his start right here at WKU. And I played with him for 1 year, this particular year, 1970. I played with him in 1969. He was a guard, a blocking guard, offensive guard. But this year he was graduate assistant coach. And there I am a year or so ago. Okay, here's a picture from with myself, Dr. Jamil Northcutt. He was assistant athletic director at Ole Miss University. He played at Ole Miss, I think in 2002, with Eli Manning. Eli Manning was a quarterback. He was a linebacker. And the statue is of James Meredith. He was the first African-American to enroll at the University of Mississippi. So they invited me down, my wife and I, in 2013, and they actually named an award in my name, the Nathaniel Northington Trailblazer in Athletics Award. And so I was the first recipient of that award. Okay, there's the book. Okay, so just briefly, I'm going to just cover a couple things real quick, and then I'm going to show you a couple of clips from the documentary. The title of the book, Still Running, you may question, well, where does that come from, Still Running? You know, he's kind of big and fat now. He's too big to run, so so now I just walk fast. I don't run anymore. But Still Running was a title that's very interesting because, you know, as you know, playing football, you do a lot of running. So I usually was a running back, a halfback in most cases. My sophomore year at UK switched me to a defensive back, and also I was a punt returner. So I did a lot of running in college, in football, a lot of running in high school. So when I was going to write the book, and I was trying to come up with a title, so the editor said, "Have you thought about any different titles?" I said, "Well, yeah, I have. You know, the story of, you know, Nate Norton." He said, "Well, everybody says that, you know, my story, right?" So he said, "Everybody does that, so no, that, we got to think of something different." So he came up with the title, "Still Running." And what that means is that, you know, I ran in football all those years, and now that I'm a minister of the gospel, then I am still running. You know, but now I'm running for a different reason, a different purpose. So I'm running for salvation, okay? So that's where the title comes from. And someone who read the book, I think, was Ms. Wright. She was saying that the book changed quite a bit because in there, I mean, there's scriptures, there's different things about, God, Jesus Christ. And, you know, we kind of put those things in there as well because without him, you know, then none of this would have been possible because, you know, he is the one that actually, in all of our lives, you know, we all know that I believe in destiny. I believe that there's a reason and a purpose for each and every one of us and that there's a plan for each and every one of us. So it's just up to us to find out what that plan is, what that destiny is that he has prepared for us. And everything that we do, I think, in life prepares us to accomplish that destiny. And when I was born in western part of Louisville, the Far West, in a little community called Little Africa, okay, because this is where a lot of the black people live, majority of the black people in Louisville live in that community, and they call it Little Africa. But some of the people that were in Little Africa were Georgia Davis Powers, who, with Dr. Martin Luther King, you know, she was the first African-American senator, a woman senator in the state of Kentucky, state senator. Also, a person by the name of Cassius Clay, okay, was a neighbor. And at that time, he was Cassius Clay, but later on, you probably know him now as Muhammad Ali. And we lived on the same street, on Grand Avenue. I live on 36th and Grand, and he lived at about 34th or 35th and Grand. And so, but my father, at 8 years old, he decided to move us from the west end of Louisville to the rural community of Newburgh. Now, Newburgh, you know, we wondered, what in the world's going on? And why is he, you know, all of our family was there, a lot of our relatives was there in Little Africa. We lived right beside my grandmother, my paternal grandmother was right beside us. My dad built every house that we owned, that we lived in. He was a contractor, he was a builder, he was a concrete finisher, he could do everything. And so he had built a house next door to my grandmother's. And so we were wondering, why are we moving? And I couldn't imagine, you know, why we would be moving from this community that we knew everybody, all our relatives, out to Newburgh, you know, which is, so at that time, was out in nowhere, no man's land. It was a country, you know. And he said, "Well, we're going to have a farm, we're going to have animals, we're going to have horses, we're going to have cattle." So we thought, "Oh, that's great, you know, we can ride the horses and all this." Never saw a horse when I was there. But he was preparing us. He was getting us. He didn't want us to be in the growing city, because things were starting to happen there in the city. And so he was a man of wisdom. So he knew that in order for us to be brought up the right way, that he wanted to get us out of that city, you know, out of the city, that city of life. And so that's what he did, move us out there. So out there in Newburgh, and I'm still talking about being prepared, how God prepares you for your destiny. So when we moved out there, we moved right across the street from a guy by the name of Wesley Unsell. Y'all ever heard of Wesley Unsell? He's an All-American of University of Louisville basketball player. He was an NBA voted the top 50 basketball players in the the century. And he's also is a Hall of Fame basketball player in NBA. So he was my role model. We played together. We ran together. So a lot of things that we did and the people that I knew that I grew up with, the church that I went to, all of that, you know, prepared me, I think, for the destination that he had prepared for me. So what I'm going to do real quick, before I go any further, I want to go ahead and show you a little clip of Forward Progress. This was produced by Jack Ford, who was a legal analyst for CBS. When he saw the book, he read the book, and he said he liked it. He said, "You know, we got to do this story." So he did the story. Okay.
Good.
Louisville, Kentucky.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saves.
Every one of us in life has a purpose. It's a matter of us realizing what that is and embracing it. Designed for us to do.
But now I'm found.
Can you imagine that we were the only African Americans on the field at that time?
But now
nobody can ever change that.
I see.
It's history.
Star running back at Thomas Jefferson. led the conference in scoring, making headlines in the local sports pages. Off the field, Northington was an excellent student and a humble young man of strong character.
We saw him as our role model. We want to emulate whatever he did, because he was successful. He was always in the newspaper. He was like knowing a star athlete. He never seemed to be very fast. And nobody ever told him.
Everything out there. Catch punts, good receiver, good defender. But he's quiet and huddled. I don't know if I ever heard him say two words out there.
Across the state in the small coal mining town of Middlesbrough, Greg Page was developing into a dominant athlete on the gridiron and the hardwood. With his 6-foot frame and chiseled physique, Page was a football player who intimidated opponents.
He was fair as an offensive end, for sure. He would sometimes just be in awe of a play he would make. And without him, I don't think we would have gotten to the state championship game.
He was very strong and he was quick. More than minority kids that played sports. And we had that attitude all the time that we were going to be the best. Because of that.
Although they couldn't know it, Northington and Page were destined to form an unlikely wedge that would bust through the SEC racial barrier. During the civil rights era.
Okay. On TV, this is a commercial time, so I can give you an opportunity at this time. Anyone have any questions or any thoughts at this particular time? Any comments? Dr. Weigel.
Now, you came to UK in, I guess, September of 66.
Yes, right.
And the famous game of 1966, all black versus all white.
Glory Road.
Was in March of 66.
Yes, it was.
But
yes.
Did you sign before that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd actually signed to go to UK in December
of
65.
Uh-huh.
And so that was right before that game, that March game, and where, if you mentioned Texas Western,
yeah.
Played UK, and with the five, first time they ever had five African-American starters
right.
in the NCAA finals. And Kentucky, of course, was not integrated at that time. The basketball, I'll say this now, the basketball program did not integrate until I think 1969, I believe. So about 3 years after we integrated, the basketball program still was not integrated.
And just a follow-up, did Wes Unseld actually try to go to UK but couldn't get in as a player?
If I have a little more time, I'll show you the clip there as well. There's a lot of debate.
Oh, okay.
Even to this day, and I see Rick back there smiling, you probably know some of the story. To this day, like I said, Wes lives the next street over from me, right across from me, and I could look over and see his house. But he was an All-American basketball player at that time. And actually, UK wanted to, they wanted to sign Wesley 1964. Okay, so 1964, they recruited him to sign him to go to UK. And, you know, Adolph Rupp, Coach Rupp came to his house. And at that time, I guess something, I don't know what happened. I've heard a lot of different stories. I just know that he did not choose to go there, you know, when he signed with the University of Louisville. That was in 64.
Yeah.
And even after that, 1965, there was a player by the name of Butch Beard.
Oh, yeah.
Who was an All-American, All-State basketball player that UK... the word is that they actually did sign him to go to UK, and he backed out of it. You know, he actually went to the University of Louisville with Wesley. So, yeah. Anyone else have a question? Or do y'all want me to talk more? You want to see some more of this? Has anybody seen this before? A few people, not too many? Yes, sir.
First game that you played in the varsity mm-hmm. player,
mm-hmm.
Did you all win that game?
No. the games that I played in, we didn't win any of them. We lost all those games. That was in 1967. Because as a freshman, you know, we played four games. We only had a four-game schedule, and we played four teams, and I was a freshman. Greg and I played then, but both of them count towards the record, as far as the official record of integrating the SEC. So we played against Tennessee, then in Knoxville, and we lost to them by, I think, one touchdown. We actually had a punt return called back that would have won the game or tied the game for us. We was playing in Tennessee, I told you, right? So so we didn't win that game. But then we played Virginia Tech and played Cincinnati and Vanderbilt, four games. We won three out of four games my freshman year. So we had a real good team. We had 38 players that signed with me to play that year. And besides Greg and I, 38 total. And unfortunately, only eight of those players ended up completing their education at UK, stayed on the football team, I'll say it put that way. Some of them may have stayed to get their education, but only eight players out of 38 stayed. And it probably tells you something, I think, that there was a problem, you know. And so, any other questions before I... Yes, sir.
Yes, since you're not able to, or it's difficult to avoid the topic of politics and any kind of money men or whatever, very breaking in the what bearing do you see for the Commonwealth of Kentucky having, the status of Commonwealth having?
I'm not a political person. I know that Kentucky is a Commonwealth, but I'm not a history or a political professor, so I don't understand the difference that much between the Commonwealth and the rest of the different states that are not Commonwealth. Kentucky was trying to integrate. The governor, Governor Breathitt, knew that it was time to integrate. And he pressed it to integrate the SEC. And I'm going to show you a little bit more of the clip, and you'll see him come in a few minutes. Okay.
Kentucky was not a flashpoint for violence like the Deep South. Institutional discrimination, though, was still very much a part of daily life for African Americans in the Commonwealth.
Growing up in Louisville, we were teenagers playing at Chickasaw Park. We wanted to go to Shawnee. They had the lights on the field, and they had a beautiful baseball diamond. So we wanted to go there and play baseball, but we couldn't because of our race.
One of the very, very famous restaurants had just started up, and we couldn't go in to eat, even though my mother worked in the kitchen.
When I went to the bathroom at the bus station, I had to go to the colored bathroom. When I drank water, I had to drink water out of the colored water fountain. When I went to the movies in Winchester, Kentucky, my hometown, I had to go up in the bathroom.
We played little league baseball, and we went for the state championship in Louisville. When it came to go to lunch, they said that we couldn't eat with the rest of the team.
By the early 1960s, attitudes were beginning to change in Kentucky. Ned Breathitt had been elected governor at 39 years old, the youngest in state history.
And we cannot set upon violence of any short term, the single class of citizens.
While most Southern politicians were fighting to maintain the grip of Jim Crow, Breathitt sought to loosen it. His partner in this cause was UK's new president, John Oswald, who arrived in Lexington from the University of California system. Breathitt and Oswald shared a vision that integrating athletics at the state's flagship university would be a catalyst for social reform.
The governors were only 1 4-year term, and it wasn't a lot of time to get things done, so you had to have a leader who pushed and didn't drop the ball and didn't lose that vision.
I think my dad very much wanted the University of Kentucky to be more in the mainstream of the country as opposed to being one of the last holdouts like Alabama and Mississippi.
Sports is something that you can get a hold of people and make them see maybe the right side of it. And I think that's what Brother Kentucky can do, and that's why he pushed it.
Could you fast forward a little bit? So as you can see, Governor Breathitt and the new president, Oswald, wanted to, you know, they had been the Kentucky Journal, the local student newspaper, had been writing about integration since 1963. So it was something that they, you know, wanted to do, they needed to do, and they had to do. I'm going to kind of cut this a little bit.
Sort of.
Probably about 5 minutes. And what you'll see in all this is, as I mentioned earlier, Jeff Ford, CBS sports analyst, he went to Yale University. And Jack also played football at Yale. He played with a guy by the name of Calvin Hill, who used to play with the Dallas Cowboys. And Jack is a legal analyst for CBS. You may see him on some mornings on TV. So very, very, you know, dynamic, intelligent person. He works with the NCAA a lot. When he saw the book and he read it, he said he knew a little bit about the story. But what he wanted to do, he went to his executives at CBS and he asked them, "Do you know who the first school was to integrate the SEC?" And all the people said Alabama. And he said, "No, it was Kentucky." Because what they remembered was the story that you all may have seen on TV, the documentary, and it's in my book also, of how Alabama, Bear Bryant, set up a game between University of Alabama and University of Southern California in 1969 or 70, I believe. And, of course, SEC, USC was integrated. Alabama wasn't. But the governor was not going to integrate, even though most of the other schools in the South Eastern Conference, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, Georgia, all those had integrated. Still, Alabama, nothing against Alabama. Alabama, I put it this way, Alabama and Mississippi, those two had not integrated. So the story is that Bear Bryant wanted to let the administration know that, you know, we need to integrate. And so he invited USC over. They beat Alabama pretty badly. They had two black running backs, Sam Bam Cunningham. And he scored a couple touchdowns, and the other back scored a few. So the next year, Alabama integrated the football program. But at this time, so Kentucky wanted to integrate. But they, as they mentioned, the basketball was going to be worse than football because basketball plays a lot of games in the Deep South. They had to go to Mississippi, they had to go to Georgia, they had to go to Tennessee. And at that time, we're talking about the 1960, like Wes Unseld, 1964. You know, he didn't want to go down there, believe me. And I think they asked the question, what I was told was that Wesley's mother had asked Coach Rupp. He said, "Now, when my son goes down to Alabama, Mississippi, the Deep South, Louisiana, wherever, are you going to protect him? Can you protect him?" And Rupp said, "Well, you know, there's no way I can protect him. I can't, you know, we do all we can, but we can't guarantee him." And so she said, "Well, he's not going." So, but by the time this, so 64 was still hot, 65, and you all probably saw the documentary this last week, a couple weeks ago, about Selma, the march from Selma to Montgomery, and they celebrated 50 years. So that was going on in 65. This documentary will tell you that Nate Northington was being recruited heavily by Purdue University in the Big Ten, which was integrated years ago, and also University of Louisville, which was integrated years ago. And the Big Ten was a tremendous conference. But Purdue University started recruiting me when I was a junior in high school, a year before UK did. And so I've been up there two times, liked it, you know, had an All-American basketball player show me around, African-American by the name of Herman Gilliam, ended up playing with Seattle, I believe, won an NBA championship. So they really wanted me badly, you know. And so I was on my way going. I'd been there in November, but then my coach, I guess, high school coach, wanted to know if I would be interested in talking to recruits in the UK. And I said, "Well, you know, sir, I don't want to, you know, y'all want to keep all your options open." And so I said, I talked to him, And when my friends would ask me, are you going to UK? Are you going to UK? I said, no way. I said, I'm not going to UK. Although I had watched UK on basketball games as a kid growing up, football games, I watched them. And they had some great teams. Because you know about the basketball teams, but the football program has started to develop too in the late 60s, 62, 63. They had some real good teams at that particular time. And so kept my options open, and I guess evidently the governor must have heard that I wasn't going to UK. So that's when he gave me the invitation for me and my whole family to come to the governor's mansion for dinner one Sunday afternoon. And so Governor Brackett, as you saw on TV, because he and what this tells you on here is that what had happened was they talked to Charlie Bradshaw, the coach, and want to know what his position was. Well, Oswald said, yeah, we're going to integrate. So it's like, since the basketball program didn't materialize in integrating, so they turned to the football program. And as you know, Kentucky is a basketball state. The rest of the country, the rest of the SEC, you know, all the schools in the South, they were football. You know, they probably could, they had decent basketball teams, but, you know, Kentucky is diehard basketball, always has been, and it is today. Is anybody waiting to go to the games? Go watch the game. I saw Kentucky shirt on back there, so. I want to see the game myself, too. but it comes on at 9 o'clock, so we've got a few more minutes, I guess. But so in my book, I talk about all these things. All these things are in the book. And I talk about growing up in Little Africa, growing up in Newburgh, because in Newburgh, Kentucky, Newburgh, before Wes Ansell came along, the year before, Seneca was a new school, Seneca High School, and Wesley's brother, George Ansell, played for them. He was one of the first African Americans to play at Seneca High School, because we're talking about 1960, so 1954 Supreme Court rule as far as integration of the schools. So it wasn't long that they started accepting, you know, African Americans to go to those schools. I went to a segregated school until I was in the 10th grade. So from the first grade through the 10th, 9th grade, I went to an all-black school. But they wanted to, so UK turned to a football program, and so that's when they started recruiting me and Greg Page from Middlesbrough, Kentucky. And like I said, I was, even when I was going down to the governor's mansion, all of my friends, I don't think Wesley was included, but some of his brothers, I played football and basketball with some of his brothers. And even up until that day, they asked me, said, are you going to Kentucky, UK? And I said, no, I'm not going to UK. I'm going to Purdue. Louisville, probably Purdue. But Purdue had a top 10 program at that time. There was a quarterback that I went to see when I was a junior that played for Purdue. His name was Bob Greasy. Anybody heard of Bob Greasy before? Miami Dolphins. So if you go up there and see that kind of game with 45,000 people and the fans and all that, I mean, as a kid, you're going to be excited, aren't you? So, but I watched Kentucky basketball, watched Kentucky football, and when I went to the governor's mansion, invited all the entire family down, and that was the governor's daughter that was talking. We met her during one of the book signings in Lexington, and first time I ever met her. And she remembers everything the governor told her. He would tell her that how we came to dinner and how he went to his office after dinner was over and sit down with him, my high school coach, and me. And he gave me the sales pitch. And, you know, and he sounded good. He was a good salesman. And I guess it didn't take a whole lot, really. I mean, I was, you know, to go there and to be interested, I guess I had to be a little bit interested. But then he talked about how about the social change. Those were the things that really, you know, resonated with me more than anything else, because it wasn't just playing football, but it was changing a whole way of life. And I think history will show that basketball, football, sports really makes a tremendous impact onto our society. They talk about how Sunday is the most segregated day of the week because of church. You know, most of our churches are segregated. You know, not by law or anything, but just by, you know, it's the way it is. But I guarantee you, the most integrated day of the week is Saturday. during the football season. You know, and that makes a big difference as far as society. He talks about how, I think you all saw over in the comments that was made, unfortunately, over in Oklahoma, you know, regarding the fraternity that was making those comments on and singing those songs, and how the football coach with Bob Stoops, who's the brother of the UK coach now, how they went arm in arm together, the black and the white players, and walked through campus. And that makes an impact because when other students see that, they see the unity that's in, you know, the sports. So they realize that, hey, it's not about race, it's about, you know, the best players, who can play the best. So so when the governor gave me the pitch, and he, you know, I mean, everything he told me was, I mean, he was a visionary. He could see. He knew that what was going to come at one day. And the reason I decided to write this book, and I wish I said it when Howard was here, Bailey, who was a friend of Greg Page,
yeah,
because if you all know the story, Greg Page broke his neck his sophomore year. Before the season started, we was in shoulder pads and shorts, not even full gear. It was like the first or second week of practice, and you know, probably a drill that should not have been running. And but the coach, unfortunately, you know, at that time, I told you about the 30 eight players that stayed, 30 of them left. Prior to that, a couple years before that, NCAA did an investigation because the player had been hit in the head and hospitalized and in a coma. They felt like the practices were too tough. They were doing too much. So they did an investigation. And what happened was they exonerated them and everything. But Greg, just a week before the game, or just a week into practice, he breaks his neck, paralyzed from his neck down. He's in the hospital for 38 days, paralyzed, because he and I are teammates and roommates, and the coach has never given me another roommate, never sends anybody in my room to talk to me, no grief counseling or anything. So for 38 days, I got to go back to the room after practice every day. And during this time, my shoulder, I dislocated my shoulder as a freshman against Vanderbilt University. Every time I would tackle somebody in practice, my shoulder would pop out of place. And so I was fighting those things. And so, you know, it was a situation where it was very, very difficult, you know, to say the least. You know, I made a decision finally that, you know, the guys on the tape here, when you see this, they will tell you that when Greg died, he died the night before we played Ole Miss University. So hospital 38 days. The coach woke us up that Friday night and told that Greg had passed. I was the only one that was able to go and see him the whole time he was in there besides the coach. None of the other players could go because they didn't want, I guess, him to see his condition. He had lost so much weight. He was on the ventilator, you know, traction and all that. And he asked for them to sit to have me bring the brain. He asked for me to come to the hospital. So they allowed me to go the one time. And when I went, you know, I mean, it was devastating, of course. But I think that, you know, I think he wanted me to come because I think he was concerned about me. And people ask me, they say, well, what took you 40, 45, 48, 49 years to put this in a book, to write a book? And before, I didn't want to talk about it, to be honest. I just, you know, I started off talking about it like 15 years after I integrated the SEC. CBS, ABC Sports came to me, and they want to do an interview. They did an interview with me. And 25 years, I guess, HBO. So there's been a lot of different stories out there from HBO, ESPN, different books, different articles, just to name a few. Just recently, UK Alumni Association did an article. But for all those years, you know, I could not really talk about it without getting extremely emotional, because I lived with that for most of my life. And, you know, any time that you do something in life, like what you have to do as far as making a change, making a difference, There are sacrifices that you have to go through. So, you know, I went through a lot of sacrifice. Greg gave the greatest sacrifice he could give, you know, to integrate Southeast Conference. And people ask, was it intentional? This happened. I don't believe that it was. It was just an accident. But were we practicing the wrong way? Were we doing this? That's debatable, you know. You know, he passed away the next morning. They asked the parents if they wanted to play the game, go ahead and play the game against Ole Miss. And they said, yeah, Greg would have wanted y'all to go ahead and play the game. So that was the first game that I played in against Ole Miss. And that's one reason I guess they invited me down there, because it was against Ole Miss, but it was in Lexington, Kentucky. And I played about 5 or 6 plays. Like I said, my shoulder had been giving me trouble. I played a game before that against Indiana University, and actually broke a record in Indiana. There was another historical record, because I was the first African American to play in a game against a Big Ten school. So against Indiana University, that was the week before. And then when Greg passed, the next day I played against Mississippi. And about the 5th play, I was making a tackle and knocked my shoulder out of place. Again, I had to leave the game. And at that time, it was, you know, I was devastated. So we went to the funeral, went to Greg's funeral that week, and took a bus down. All the players that were freshmen that year, that we came down together. We went to the game, went to the funeral. And so the picture you saw was me going to the grave site. After the funeral, we came back to campus. We practiced for 3 hours the day of Greg Page's funeral. They made us practice for 3 hours. And, you know, and I pretty much determined that was enough, that I was really tired of, you know, I just couldn't take it anymore. So, but the deciding factor was, during the time that Greg was hospitalized, and, you know, I guess I was so distraught that I missed some classes. And we went down to Auburn, Alabama, and I was the only one there, first time a black player had ever gone to Alabama, in the Deep South, to play any kind of sport. And so I played against Auburn, Alabama, in 67, dislocated my shoulder again. And had to come out of the game, came home, played against Virginia Tech. And so the next week, the coach called me to the office and he said, you know, I found out that you were missing classes, and we're going to have to take your meal ticket. So if I hadn't made up my mind, that was a deciding factor. I said, well, you know, this is too much. So I did, and before I did, I went to talk. You all have to, let's go ahead and show them a few more slides here real quick. Sorry to take so much time.
The Big Ten had a long-established pipeline to the black players of the South. Nate Northington had been heavily recruited by Purdue, a rising program on the verge of a top 10 ranking. In the winter of 1965, Northington was set to be a Boilermaker. Then, the unexpected happened.
Coach Gray asked me if I would be interested in talking to Coach from UK, recruiter. And I said, of course, you know, I would. You know, it was a sort of a courtesy.
As part of his recruiting pitch, Governor Ned Breathitt invited Northington and his family to join him for a private lunch.
We got an invitation to go to the governor's mansion. Okay.
It was something unique. It was something special. We were both excited to get the governor in on it. People of that nature, that magnitude, we saw that there's something great. Most kids I age didn't experience.
I can only imagine what Nate and his mom and dad and his brothers and sisters felt like arriving there and being feted by this young, handsome, courageous governor of Kentucky. I'm sure they were blown away.
Gosh, to go to the governor's mansion to have lunch, is quite a deal. It's quite a deal for anybody to come there and do that. But I think that it impressed him that he had the backing of the governor of Kentucky.
After lunch, Breathitt sat down with Northington in his office and laid out his plan to integrate football in the Southeastern Conference.
When we got there, he was very, of course, passionate about how this would really benefit not only the African-American community, but the entire South, you know, white and black. And what he said was that, you know, that it was time, that Dr. Oswald was committed, the university was committed, the coaches were committed, you know, to do all they could to make it successful, and that he felt like that I was the person that could do it. He also said that I wouldn't be alone, that they would be able to sign, once I made a commitment, somebody else.
My father opened up his suit coat and pulled a contract out of his pocket and said, "Here's your contract, young man. Would you please sign it?"
He asked me about signing, you know, to go to the University of Kentucky and be the first. I guess at the moment I felt that, yeah, this is, you know, the time is right. This is the time, and I need to go ahead and make a commitment to do that.
When Mike Norland signed, it was a big deal. It was a big press story. Not only on the newspapers, but on the television as well. And played it up big that he had signed with UK. And of course, I think what the governor was interested in is once he had signed Nate, then that would lead to more African Americans coming to UK. And of course, it did.
Greg Page soon followed Northington to Lexington. The signing of the SEC's first two black football recruits was a source of pride for UK leadership. Others, though, fear the consequences.
Breathitt receives a letter from a woman who was a friend of the Northington family. She was a white woman. And she's very much concerned about the well-being of Matt Northington. And said, "Governor, you know, you are responsible, you know, for what happens to him. You, the University of Kentucky, and the community. And when he goes into the Deep South, you know, you're the one that's going to make sure that, you know, he's protected."
I was a little nervous, yes I was. The experiences that we had growing up, getting names called, getting eggs thrown at us, we was discriminated. And he was getting ready to get put in a hotbed of situations like that. He was telling me, I don't know, I said, "You'll be all right, you know, you're gonna be okay, man."
But playing in the Deep South would be the least of their concerns. And Greg Page arrived at the University of Kentucky in the fall of 1966. They became fast friends, navigating an overwhelmingly white sea of students.
When Coach Boone was recruiting me, I think I asked him how many, you know, African Americans are enrolled in the UK. And I think the number was a little bit inflated that I was given.
I'm probably being generous when I say 50 of us on campus, up against what, 18,000 students maybe. You did get used to sometimes hearing English. It was usually from a fraternity house that you walk by, or maybe a dorm, somebody upstairs, or a car that would just drive by.
I felt very uncomfortable at UK. There was that separation where you felt like you weren't really welcome.
At that time, it was only him and Greg. They were the only two African Americans on the team, so they became even closer together.
They needed each other. Greg was so outgoing and had the perfect introvert and extrovert, these two guys. But I really think Nat needed Greg to take him through whatever pioneering they were doing. I think you needed someone situation seemed too big for him.
We spent most of our time, you know, together, eating together, you know, roommates, practices together. We were like brothers. We could share, you know, almost anything.
football and the unrelenting demands of their coach, Charlie Bradshaw. He was notorious for his brutal practices, which he inflicted on all of his players without regard to race.
He was known for his toughness, his competitive spirit, his personal drive, and everything he did. He was that kind of person.
Coach Bradshaw was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. You sit down and talk to him. He was a very religious man and soft-spoken and kind of laid back. And on the field, he was a different, totally different monster. We'd be in full gear, and I can remember Coach Bradshaw busting one of our linemen, and all of a sudden his forehead started bleeding.
He was notorious for coming down from the tower, and you were hoping he wasn't heading your way to demonstrate how you were supposed to do a proper block or proper tackle, because he was a wiry man, and he'd turn that hat around and hit your head on with it.
Coach Bradshaw was very intense. You'd like to see who was going to be out there on Saturday, who was willing to win the game. So he felt like that was determining practice. What they told me, though, was that it cooled down some when we got there. So I was thinking, well, that's what's called cooling down. I hated to be here a few years ago.
In 1966, the NCAA didn't allow college freshmen to play varsity football. While Northington and Page waited for their chance to make SEC history, they excelled on the freshman team. Nate led the team in yards per carry and Greg in tackles per game. Off the field, they made an impact as well. The other black students on campus reveled in their success.
We had a good freshman season, and both Greg and I performed, you know, very well. So I think the varsity players could see that we had talent, and that we just weren't there, you know, as a token person that couldn't play ball.
As a football player, your name was known across the state. You know, you were in the newspapers, you're on the radio. You know, you were a symbol that we have arrived. Although it's in athletics, that just might be the door to prove what else we can do.
When Nate and Greg came, it was having a moment that we have these guys that we can now, both of those guys, we could identify with those guys. They were our Jackie Robinson.
Okay. We've been called a lot of things, and that's what I remember him very well. Peoples, he's been over the Urban League for a number of years since he left UK, I guess. But he felt like we were Jackie Robinsons. There have been different articles written, you know, Bleacher Report, different magazines, and, you know, we were pioneers. And that was something that, you know, nobody could take away. And one of the reasons why I wanted to write the book was because, you know, I watched TV over the years. Now you watch the ball games, you see Alabama, you know, Auburn, those teams winning the SEC championship, All-American players, and usually there's no mention of how it all got started. So most of the kids now, most of the people now that see that, they might feel like that that's the way it's always been. But it wasn't the way it always was. So I said, well, you know, it has to be told. And there was a 30-30 ESPN article that came on TV about Conridge Holloway, which was the first African-American quarterback in the SEC in 1970-something. Sylvester Croom, which was the first African-American football coach in the SEC, like 1980-something. But there's nothing been said about, you know, Greg Page or Nate Northington being the first African-American players in the SEC. So I felt like that, you know, history could not, you know, the truth had to come out, it had to be told. And Greg, nobody knew his story, how he had died, you know, before he could play the first game. And, you know, although I was the one that officially broke the record, broke the barrier, you know, it was just as much him being there as I was, because I wouldn't have been able to do it without him, without a lot of the other players. So it takes everybody, not just, you know, we can't do it by, African-American can't do it, they cannot have done it by themselves, like the Martin Luther King Jr. cannot have done it by himself. So it takes people of all races, creeds, and colors to really make a difference, to stand up, you know, for equality, for civil rights. And I'm just grateful that that God, you know, chose me to be one of the people that would do that. And so I'm grateful for that. I'm thankful. You know, when I left UK in 1967 to come down to West Kentucky University, came down in 68, people might have felt like that the integration wasn't successful because and the guys say on the screen, said, well, Nate was gone, Greg had died, and we were only two left. It was Wilbur Hackett, they were freshmen, Houston Hall. Well, history had already been made. So I was glad that we made history. I talked to Wilbur and to Houston before I left and talked to them and said, well, Nate, you're ready to go too. We're going to leave with you. And I said, no, you're not. You're not going to go. Because what Greg and I did, we don't want it to be in vain. So they stayed the whole 3 years, made varsity. The next year, 1968, Kentucky signed no African-American players. The next year, Coach Bradshaw was fired. The new coach came in, and I'd already transferred down to Western. I hadn't played yet. Sat out a year. So the coach came, they came to me and wanted me to come back to Kentucky to play in my last 2 years. But I'd already settled here in Bowling Green. I was going to be playing football the next year. And I thought about it, you know, very, very hard, very, it was a difficult decision, but I just felt like that, you know, don't go backwards. Although I appreciated them wanting me to come back with the new coach and everything, and had 2 more years, but the sacrifice had already been made, and I don't want to put my family through going through that again. And so I decided to stay here at WKU. So I'm glad that I did. I met some good people, good players, good coaching staff. You know, Coach Fikes, Jimmy Fikes. We won the championship my senior year. Got a good education. So I'm just thankful for that. That's it. Any questions?
Time for some questions. When you had your shoulder separated, did you think you got proper medical attention? You kept going back into the game.
Right.
That wouldn't happen today, would it?
No, it wouldn't. when I left, after I left the UK, they wanted me to come back. The coach had me come back, and you know I did go back down there to speak with them, and they tried to convince me to stay. And you know, one of the things they said was, we're going to go ahead and get your shoulder operated on, you know, like it should have been before. And so they just kept putting me back in the game, and I needed medical attention. I needed an operation.
Yeah.
So I didn't get it until after I left school.
Was there a different feel racially between UK and WKU as far as football team and camaraderie?
Yeah, WKU, of course, we had more, you know, African Americans, and it's already been integrated a few years before, several years before, and we had a good mix. So definitely was a different feeling, different atmosphere, and I just felt totally comfortable, you know, here playing ball here at WKU. We had some good. Greg and I had some good friends, you know, there at UK. So some very good friends that were white, of course, on the team. So we did have a lot of good support. Yes.
Office. Mm-hmm. I mean,
when you went back and processed all this, how did mom feel about this? Because, and, you know, like you said, there were only 50 people at that time. Mm-hmm. Well, give you this a quick answer. My father went to all our football games since I was a kid growing up. And I talk about that in the book. And my mother would go to the ball games. We were in college at UK and also down here at Western. One brother went to Purdue University, got drafted by the watching the Redskins. Another brother, the youngest brother who was on in the film, he went to UK and in the 70s, late 70s, and played football there. Mom would go to the games, but she wouldn't get out of the car. So she did not want to see us playing or getting hurt. So the apprehension that she had, I'm sure, was tremendous. And for me to sign to go to UK, and she's from Mississippi, you know, I'm sure she was proud of us, proud of me as far as being able to get a scholarship. I'm sure she would have, she never said, she never told me that she was disappointed or that she didn't like the fact that I went. She even smiled, and I think she was happy. But I'm sure that she must have had a lot of sleepless nights. And she probably would prefer that I went to Purdue.
Yeah.
Because, you know, nobody was, I mean, this was some serious, people were getting killed in the South, all over, not just the South, but the South was particularly bad. Yes.
When you went to play all of them, did you have separate restaurants or hotel rooms?
We had to go to, we could not go to the normal hotel that the schools usually stayed at. We had to go to a separate, different hotel that would accept me being there. And we didn't go outside, we just stayed inside to eat. So we had to go to a special place that they arranged. And on the field, you know, I'm sending a book too, I go out on the field and I'm thinking, man, you know, this is about 50,000 people and I don't see any black people in there. And I see the state troopers with Confederate flags and their gun belts. And I'm out here all alone.
One more question. How was your
kid? Good. Yeah, good. Like you said, you know, you're going to hear things going through campus or whatever, but generally on the football field, the players, I mean, they knew they couldn't get away with it. If they wanted to say something, they couldn't, because they would have to go and suffer consequences for the coaches or administration if that happened. So we had support, and I'm sure that we had some that, you know, probably felt like that, you know, why are you all here? But they didn't bring it out. They didn't share that. But at Auburn, when I walked out on the field for the game and looked up and saw all these people, you know, I'm thinking, my God, what do I get myself into? And this is only 4 days after we buried Greg. You know, we got on the plane and went straight down to Auburn, Alabama after the 3-hour practice. So I looked up in the stands in the end zone. There were some wooden bleachers, and I saw some African Americans there in Auburn. And I thought, God, there is God, and He likes me. You know, there's some African Americans here, and so that's what I thought. But you know, it was a success, even though I left, even though Greg passed. Only a few years later, like I said, the next year, there was no African-American sign at the coach was fired. The next year, they invited me to come back. A lot of the other players that had left, they invited them to come back, too. Some of them did. I decided not to go back. But only a short time after that, like I said, my brother was an All-American player after me, Mike. And he was an All-American high school player in Louisville. Purdue recruited him as well. He decided to go to Purdue. My next brother, Kenny, who was the fastest of all of us, won a 100-yard dash in the state, won a 200-yard dash, won a low hurdles. He ran track at UK as well. And he decided to go to UK. And so he went there under Coach Kersey. They won the Peach Bowl in 1976. So just a short time after we had started it, you know, they had some All-Americans. There are quite a few players that came from my high school that went there to UK and made All-American, All-SEC. So a lot of people from my community went there, a number of players, at least 7 or 8 players went to UK to play football at UK after I left. So it was definitely successful. Some of the newspaper articles that came out later talked about that. And there was 2 articles that came out when I was doing my research for the book. And one guy said that 10 entitled the 10 college football legends that deserve a statue. And I was one of the 10 that he said deserve a statue for what I had done in the SEC. Other article said that there was five players that made, there was five people that SEC owes a lot to. And I was included in one of those five with Steve Spurrier, Bear Bryant, and some of those. So I'm glad to say that UK is considering doing some statues, possibly me and the other two. The two guys you saw in there, you didn't see one of the guys, Houston Hall and Wilbur Hackett. It may happen, it may not. They're doing a total renovation of the stadium now, $100 million renovation. So they're talking about putting something there to recognize us, me and Greg Page. Greg Page has a dormitory name at the M at UK called the Greg Page Dorms. So they're thinking about doing that. And somebody asked me the other day on a radio program, he said, I know all about sports. I've seen all of this. I've seen, you know, all these different things on TV. Like, why aren't you on there? Why is there a movie about you all? And I told him that it's on the way.
And on that note, we're going to move to the door prize, and we're going to give a copy of Nate's book away, and I'm sure he'll be pleased to sign it.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you all so much for coming out. I appreciate it. God bless you. Thank you.
I'd like to ask our Dean of Libraries, Connie Foster, to come forward and make a special presentation.
In the best spirit of academics and athletics, yes, we would like you to have a WKU Libraries Red Towel.
All right. Thank you.
Wave it proudly.
Thank you. And again, a little t-shirt and a token, a little gift for you, a token of our appreciation. Thank you very much for a most memorable evening.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Okay, have a good evening.